Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I'm your host, Ed Rudell. And in studio with me, we have Cal Carson and Gary Baker. This is going to be a one-hour live broadcast on our local syndicate, WJR. And we'll be taking questions and answering your questions right after we get back at 800-859-0957. Again, we look forward to your questions. We'll be right back.
Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor Show. This is Gary Baker. I'm here with Ed Rudell and Cal Carson, and we're here to answer your questions. We've got an hour, but first, we're going to do what we do every week on the Internet Advisor Show, and that's talk to Mike Brennan, the editor of MyTechNews.com. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Great, Gary. Good talking to you.
Hey, we have you on every week because as partners, you bring an awful lot of very cool tech news to our listeners, and you do that in the form of mytechnews.com. It's a website, but we all sign up for your email, and we suggest our folks sign up as well. And then they get all sorts of really news that's helpful for them. Not only does it tell them what's going on in the tech world here in Michigan and the Midwest and sometimes nationally, but it also gives them some great other information as well. Like this week, for instance, I was really intrigued by Maker Faire. And there's a couple of them that are going on here in the next few weeks or next couple months, right?
Yeah, you've got in Ann Arbor, you've got the Mini Maker Faire, which is actually aimed at kids. And it's going to be taking place on Saturday, June 6th from 10 to 4 p.m. And all that information is at my website. If you want to sign up, you can still sign up if you're a kid. I think you're a little old to sign up for that one, Gary.
I act like a kid a lot of times.
Well, that's what your wife says for sure, right?
You know, so. Absolutely.
So that's a good one. And Ann Arbor, of course, is a real hotbed for that sort of activity. Then there's a really big one coming up in Detroit at the Henry Ford on July 25th and 26th, where they're not only expecting more than 400 makers to be exhibiting, but 25,000 people to show up to see what they make.
So tell us about Maker Faire, because I'm sure that some of our listening audience has not heard of this or only heard of it, and they don't really know what to expect. Tell us a little bit about what
maker
goes on.
The maker movement was started probably more than a decade ago, but it's really taking on legs right now. And in the beginning, it was artsy, craftsy kinds of stuff, you know, the beads and jewelry and things like that. But now it's morphed more into real hardware products. I mean, Michigan is... That's what we do well. We make things. So it's a really incredibly good fit for Michigan, where you have a lot of top-notch engineers, you have a lot of creative people making stuff, and it could be, it's just amazing what they come up with. But lately it's been, like say, focused on hardware products, some software products, but it's just all over the board. It's just amazing.
I can remember Mark Hatch, who is the president of TechShop, and TechShop is a national organization or series of tech shops around the country. They partnered with Ford to put a Maker Faire, in fact, right next to the Detroit Lions practice facility in Allen Park. And when they were launching this about 2 years ago, he was talking about a jetpack that they had, one of the makers that come in, they pay $100 a month, and they have free reign of the facilities, of all the equipment that they're certified to use, and all you have to do is show up and learn how to use it. So there's some equipment that's really tough to use. You have to really learn how to use it, bandsaws and whatnot. You got to be careful because it can be dangerous. But
even CNC machines. A lot of these places have CNC machines. So it's essentially going back to our roots of being a big tool and die center. That's what really brought the auto industry to Michigan more than 100 years ago. Is we were really good at tool and die, and it's kind of an offshoot of that.
So all they have to do is sign up for your for your email newsletter, or go to your website, and they can get all the information about Maker Faire, right?
Right.
Great.
Absolutely.
So tell us another. I saw Comcast again was in the news. I mean, they're making news, it seems like, all the time these days. But they're talking about the new remote controls, I guess, that are out there.
Yeah, I went to a demo this week at Comcast Regional Headquarters in Plymouth, and they showed off a remote that they just, and I'm just playing around with it this weekend, where it has voice control on it. So if you depress the microphone button and aim it at your DVR, your X1 DVR, that's the thing, you've got to have one of those, X1 platform, and say the words WJR, if that's somewhere to be found on the Comcast network, it would pull it up rather than you punching that in. I don't know whether WJR would be there, but I just use that as an example. And then also they have this particular program that's involved with the X1 platform where you can share your video. For instance, you run it through your smartphone, you're out taking a video of your son who's playing baseball, and grandma in North Carolina has a X1 platform. You can take that video, run it through your smartphone, which goes through the X1 system, and then grandma can see the grandson playing baseball live in North Carolina. So it's kind of cool.
Wow, that sounds good. Yeah, not only can I got a new way of channel surfing now, but I could take and distribute my videos without actually having to go through all the trouble of posting that onto YouTube. But that's, I think, only grandma can see it, right? I have to send it to each individual person?
Yeah, it's not a broadcast situation yet, although they said they were looking at the possibility of doing that. It's one-on-one, so you can directly send it to somebody just like you would an email or a text or something like that.
We're starting to get little nieces and nephews, grandnieces and nephews, so I can see that being a really important function in our household. Well, Mike Brennan, the editor of mytechnews.com, thank you very much. We hope to talk to you again next week.
Absolutely, Gary. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. We are going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to take your calls. So stay tuned.
Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Cal Carson. I'm here with Ed Rudell and the fabulous Gary Baker. Foster is off for today, but he will be back next week to give us his dulcet tones to this microphone once again. I want to say thank you to Rich Lazinski, who's working behind the glass, spinning the knobs and the dials, and also to Mike Stetz, who is the gent you will be talking to on the telephone when you call in with your questions. And hey, you can call your questions in at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-WJR. And we'll be taking questions for the next hour or so. So if you have a question you want to ask about technology, about your computer, or how do you get around on the internet or that sort of thing, please feel free to give us a call once again at 1-800-859-0957, and we'll do our best to answer those questions for you. And remember, the only question to ask that is dumb is the one that you do not ask.
That's so, almost like how Foster says it.
That's close,
yeah,
yes.
He says it with more enthusiasm somehow. We need Foster.
Well, let's try it again then.
Okay.
The only dumb question that... You know something? I don't know how to say that. The only dumb question is the question that you don't ask.
That's right. And ask easy ones. We always like easy ones.
Yeah,
hey,
softball.
So we had a question last week about Facebook, and we have Larry on the line who is going to help us answer that or has an answer for it. Welcome to the Internet Advisor Show, Larry.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for taking my call. What happened is last week after I heard the podcast about the Facebook question, the lady was asking why Facebook has messages that she's connected with a new device or that she's connected from a new location. And
I think that was the big thing, was that she was saying, gee, that it looks like that she was connected from a location she had never been in before, and why would that happen? And is that maybe a hacker that's using her Facebook account to get on from, you know, Dublin, Ohio, or wherever it would
be? Oh, is that what happened? I wasn't on the air last week. Okay, yeah, because there is a... But I'll let Larry tell us where it's at.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what type of software they're using to track the IP address is the internet protocol address. And, but like the example that I gave in my email to Foster was I have, DSL through, Frontier Communications, mm-hmm, out here in Lapeer County. And however they route it, sometimes it shows up that my connection is over in CAPEC or Yale or Emmett, or I've seen it St. John's, Michigan, north of Lansing, Muskegon, where I know they have a big center over there, and then also Rochester, New York. So it's just where they're headquartered. So it's wherever they're wherever you're connecting, wherever they're routing the traffic. In this case, you know, the DSL through Frontier Communications. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other example that I gave, I am an adjunct instructor over at Baker College, Auburn Hills and Clinton Township campuses. Uh-huh. Sure. And I'll connect to Facebook from there, and their main servers are at the main campus in Flint. So it's going to show, Facebook's going to return a message to me as well that I've connected from a different location, in this case being Flint. Well, I'm not in Flint. I'm either in Auburn Hills or Clinton Township, and that's what's happening.
You know, and I seem to remember something along that. Early on with Facebook, if I ever used a public library to you know, log in, I would receive another notification that on my, I think it was my cell phone, that basically that someone is logging in. Do you wish to approve or allow this device to have access to your mm-hmm. Facebook account?
Interesting. So it has something to do with maybe the IP address that they're they're connected
well,
from?
There's a setting in Facebook that you can be notified other connections to your Facebook account.
Okay.
And then so I receive notifications if another device is connecting. So there's that one instance. And then there's what basically Larry's saying, is that Facebook tracks the IP address of wherever the connections are and tailors advertisements to those locations.
Right.
Because occasionally on Facebook, I'll get notifications. Ed, would you please confirm if you're from Oxford or Ortonville or Lake Orion? And I'm like, I'm not going to answer their damn question. You know, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want them to narrow it down exactly where I'm at.
So I think what Larry was saying, too, was that if it is IP address related, it's wherever that IP gateway back is and
right,
the way that traffic is routed. And the nice thing about the internet is that if it's congested, kind of on run route, it'll route your traffic a different way. So sometimes it may connect out of the Frontier system, in your case, Larry, near where you are, and sometimes they route it through Frontier to route through the gateway that's maybe quite distance from you.
Less congested. And then what Ed was saying was every device has a MAC address, media access control, and that's like I got a from my wife and son for Christmas a Amazon Kindle, and when I first connected with that, then it said Facebook gave me a message as he stated, you know, you're connecting with a new device. Is this okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what's happening there. No, the lady's not being hacked. It's just that Facebook is just giving those notices.
Right, and if she is worried that maybe she is, that she continues getting notifications that another device is attempting to connect, and she's receiving notification that another device is trying to access her Facebook account, the simple solution is to go onto her primary PC and go into Facebook and reset your password.
Just change
your password.
Yep.
That would do it, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you, Larry, so much for that, for calling
in. You're welcome.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And we actually ask people, not only can they call in with questions, but in the case where Larry had heard this on the podcast, and he called in with an answer. And by doing that, it allows us to help other people as well. So we've got another caller. So because our system is down, I don't just heard it's Joe from Farmington Hills. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
I think he got rerouted on Facebook.
He might have. We're gonna put him back on hold and see if he comes back. And Mike from Clinton, we would welcome you to the Internet Advisor Show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, we can't see you, but we can hear you just fine.
There we go. See, my computer with Microsoft Outlook 2010 email received and sending was fine using Brighthouse. I changed over to AT&T. The email receive works fine. I cannot get the email sending to work.
when you
the support problem, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So if you go to AT&T's website, okay. And
yes, I've been there.
Okay.
Gave me three different locations in the world, including going off somewhere in Malaysia and somewhere in India.
So this we're not talking about support. Talking about the configuration of your email client.
No. I understand. They were supposed to give me help. And I would assume in regards to the configurations. So you're making the statement that I thought was true, probably, that it's their problem and I do not have to pay $150 for them to tell me to do so. Well, I think...
Hold on. Yep. Okay, let me explain how email works, because you said it worked originally with Brighthouse, and now what you're doing is you're with AT&T. Well, when you configure an email client, you need to know the incoming outgoing servers, and I assume that you found that information. And the other thing you need to do is the port numbers that those servers work on.
That's what I have to get from them, the port servers.
Okay, I got your answer for you right now.
Cal, good going.
Okay, so your incoming mail server, which is probably working for you, is pop.att.yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that you can use for incoming would be imap@att.yahoo.com, and that'd be running on port 993.
Well, that's not working. That's IMAP, not POP.
Okay. And he needs the port number for outgoing.
Which it's probably 578.
Well, and it also requires authentication, too. So he has to put in a password for the outgoing as well.
Right. But what's the outgoing server? Is it the same?
Well, the server...
He was right. I believe it's 578.
No, I mean the server name. Is the incoming and outgoing server the same?
The outgoing server should be smtp.att.yahoo.com.
Okay. And then you believe the port number would be?
What Gary just said.
I believe it's 578.
578. Okay.
If I recall correctly. And if it's not, it's one like that. So.
And simple, if it isn't.
If you had it with Brighthouse, it was 25.
Right.
And they're not using that anymore.
And the simple thing to do is you can type in into your favorite search engine like Bing or Google, and you could type in the smtp.att.yahoo.com, and then you can say, what is the port number? And magically, it'll appear on your browser search.
So hang on. Uh-oh. We're going to talk to you offline, and we'll make sure you get up and running. And for the rest of you, we're going to take a short break and come back and answer more of your questions. So hang on, and the Internet Advisor will be right back.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Ed Riddell here with Cal Carson and Gary Baker. We're here taking your questions for the next 30 minutes at 800-859-0957 or 800-859-0WJR. And we were talking to Joe in that last segment, and each one of us chimed in, and it was a little confusing. Joe was obviously a little upset about the runaround he got from the support from AT&T when he switched from Brighthouse to AT&T Yahoo.
They should have given him instructions on where to go to set up his email correctly, right?
Correct.
Because it would have changed, and it's specific to them. Well, I had given him a port number that Comcast actually uses, not the one that AT&T uses, so that was my mistake. But, Cal, you now have a way to get to all of those numbers, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the easiest way to do it that I have found is if he goes to att.com on the Internet, and then he'll get a screen up there, and he'll click on the support tab. And then underneath the support tab, there's one that says Internet. And then he's going to select high-speed Internet support. And they have nicely laid out there a thing called how to set up your email program. And they have email settings specifically for Outlook 2013, Outlook 2010, Outlook 2007, and for Mac OS Mail. And all you have to do is click on the appropriate icon, and it'll just walk you through the entire process all the way down the board, give you the port numbers, the whole shooting match, so you can set it up and have it going for them within a very short period of time.
And go ahead.
I was going to say that what we finally discovered and what we tried to say at the end of last hour is the actual outgoing mail server for AT&T was what, Cal?
I believe it was outbound.att.
Outbound or SMTP?
SMTP is almost always.
Now we're having lots of fun because they got two different ways.
How about the port number? Because that's really what he wanted.
That was port 995.
So that, Joe, if you're still listening, port 995.
Wait, that's completely different than the one you just told me a few minutes. You said 465.
All right.
My goodness. So follow his original instructions on how to navigate to the website.
Just go to the website
and do it that way.
Lose there.
Right. Okay. And because in here is complete chaos and confusion. Now, but how does he go into the email client? Well, if he's running Outlook, you go into your control panel, and when you select small icon or large icon view instead of the category view, you'll have a mail setting applet in there in the control panel. And when you click on that, that brings up the properties to configure your Outlook 2010 mail properties. So when you click mail in the control panel, he'll be able to modify the advanced settings inbound and outbound email for his Outlook 2010.
That sounds great. Let's go out to Mike. And Mike, you have a question for us. Mike, are you there?
I think I put him to sleep with all that.
Hello?
There he is. Okay. Hi, Mike.
Okay. Howdy. I've evidently, my wife's computer gotten a virus on it. And a friend of mine said, well, try AVG. And see what they can do for you. I went online with it. I was on Internet Explorer. I clicked on AVG, and my gosh, I got 30 some different things downloaded so fast. I started uninstalling, and every time I'd uninstall one, I'd get a couple more back.
Oh no! So I'm sorry. Did you say this was what type of computer? Is it running? Is it Windows?
It's a Dell Windows 7.
Okay. And when you were uninstalling them, were you just going into the control panel, programs and features, and trying to uninstall them there?
Yes.
Okay. You know, one thing that can happen, and you're doing the right thing by trying to uninstall them right away, but if you're online, or if the programs are actually running in the background, because it sounds like you are infected now with a number of things, you may want to try to bring your computer in safe mode. A lot of these programs will not be running while Windows is in safe mode, and you can repeat the same process you had just tried, which was going to the control panel, programs and features, listing all the programs. And what I typically do is you sort all the programs by date installed. There should be a field at the top there.
Right.
Perfect.
Right. That's what I looked at. I looked at the date that was on them, and I tried taking, well, this happened on the 15th and 16th.
Well,
so I tried taking everything off for those dates, and they just kept increasing. And then Internet Explorer kept quitting on me.
So have you tried this in safe mode?
No, I have not.
Okay, so I think that might be the key to help you with this. And have you got another computer in the house by chance?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I would try your steps with powering up your computer, powering up the infected computer, and then tapping your F8 key function on the top row and bringing it up in safe mode. When you tap the F8, you'll be presented with the option of bringing your computer in safe mode with networking. Bring it up in safe mode. Don't even bother with the networking right now. And then repeat the process that you were trying to uninstall all those programs manually by the date installed. We're hoping there's a good chance that a lot of these are not running in the background. They won't try to reinstall. They may, though. And that's why I asked if you had another computer in the house that you can download Malwarebytes. And Malwarebytes will install in Windows Safe Mode. And you go to malwarebytes.org, or if you're not familiar with the program, you can go to the internetadvisor.net website underneath our toolkit. And in the toolkit, we have a malware uninstaller list right there. And Malwarebytes is listed there with a friendly link to download.
And you want to make sure that he looks for the free Malwarebytes, right?
Right. Well, there is only one version now.
Oh, there is. Okay.
If you try to select the other version, you're downloading the same one, but it will challenge you to enter in the license key that you've registered and paid the $25 for. Okay. But you can use the free version. Thank you, Gary, for doing that. And it's completely functional. And you could put that on a flash drive or a USB flash drive from the working computer. And when you can bring it over to the computer that you brought up in safe mode, plug the flash drive in, and you should be able to run it there.
download that from the flash drive into the infected computer.
Yep. Or yeah, download it onto a working computer and put it on the flash drive. You'll probably have to reboot the computer that's infected and bring it up in safe mode with networking the second time.
Okay.
And when you do that, at least when you install Malwarebytes, when you install it, one of the first things it's going to do is try to update itself with virus definitions. And if you have safe mode with networking enabled, it'll be able to download those updated definitions so that you can do a complete scan. How does that sound as sort of like a...
it's going to be a mouthful for me to do, but...
Well, the safe mode is the only thing different than you've already tried, so that should be pretty easy. The hard part, if you're not used to doing it, is using another computer, downloading Malwarebytes, and putting it on a flash drive and walking it over to the other.
So, Ed, in this
I've
case...
I've got one here, but I've never used it.
Okay. Oh, well, okay.
So in this case,
it's a flash drive. It's a 4 gig plugs into the USB port.
There you go.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you're familiar with, you can save the Malwarebytes that you download onto your desktop, and then afterwards, you're probably used to doing that, right? Downloading files and saving them to your desktop or My Documents.
Yeah.
And then you can just take that file and drag it to the flash drive. You'll open up your My Computer, and then you'll plug in the flash drive, and you'll see that the flash drive will express itself and say that it's just inserted. What would you like to do? And you select, I wish to open a file window so that I can see my flash drive. And then you drag and drop the Malwarebytes that you downloaded onto your desktop, and you drag it into that opened window.
I'll see if I can do that.
So, Ed, I think this happens to you way more than it does to me. But as I meet people throughout the week, they say, "Oh, you're on the Internet Advisor Show." Hey, and they ask me a support question, right? One guy told me that when he gets into a situation like this, he just takes and deletes or uninstalls his Internet Explorer, and then he goes and uninstalls some of the things that he had put on that Internet Explorer as plugins, mm-hmm. and then he lets his operating system rediscover and reinstall the Internet Explorer again.
Well, that's a good point, and that can be done.
He says, it's easier. I can't figure anything else out. I'll just do it, because it automatically comes back, reinstalls.
Well, that's true, but these programs, he has a lot of different programs that have installed, so it would be good to run a scanner that can remove them.
Right.
It's true that when this is all done, Internet Explorer may be damaged or even become crippled, because right now there's a lot of add-ons on there. We're hoping that Malwarebytes, which is a scanner, will remove those and identify them. And in a perfect world, Internet Explorer worked just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, what you're suggesting should work. You can uninstall Internet Explorer and...
Then uninstall the other things as well.
As well. And then Internet Explorer will reinstall itself afterwards.
Okay.
During the next Windows update. Great question, Joe. Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for calling in, and we'll be back in a few minutes with more on the Internet Advisor. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Cal Carson here with Gary Baker and Ed Rudell. And we want to give you some more time where you can call in and ask that question you've always wanted to ask. So call us at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. And I wanted to just go back and talk a little bit more about the mail settings that we were talking about earlier, because I wanted to make sure the caller had clear information. And with AT&T, if you're doing your inbound and your outbound mail and you're setting them in your mail settings, and if you go to their website and look at the various different email clients that they have out there for you to set up, you're going to select for inbound, it's going to be inbound.att.net. And the port setting for that on a POP server is 995. If it's outbound, it's going to be outbound.att.net with a port server setting of 465. And that would be your SMTP port for your outbound mail.
Remember how in the old days they used to call it, the inbound server was always called POP and the outbound was always called SMTP.
Yeah, simple
mail. They made it simpler.
Protocol.
Yeah.
Right.
They just made it simpler by calling the inbound mail server is now called inbound, and the outbound is called outbound. Yep.
Now, what did you say SMTP stood for?
Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
What does POP stand for?
Plain old.
How about point of presence?
Point of presence. Is it point of presence? I think it's something post office, but anyway. But we have some callers.
We do.
So Mark from.
I've been there for 38 years.
Great. Mark, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for us?
Yes, sir. Our computer is being held hostage.
That's not good.
Is this the hostage where the data was encrypted and they're at, asking money?
Yes.
Oh, man. That's not good.
No, and actually, unfortunately, my wife did pay them some money.
And?
And now our computer does not work. And actually, here's my wife right here, sir. She can explain it to you better.
Wow.
Oh, that's too bad.
So what's your wife's name?
We're on the line.
Yeah, they're getting all sick.
Hello, sir.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, welcome to the Internet Advisor. We just spoke to your husband, Mark, and he told us that your computer was basically got a piece of software on there that was holding it ransom.
It's as close as I can figure. It's called WizTech.
WizTech.
And about a year and a half ago, I did buy a product from them, and they helped me. But then they called me back and want to help me now with this malware bite thing. And yes, I can't do anything with my computer. And they also tried to charge to my account, my debit card or my credit card, either one. They wanted $600. Well, I stopped it before they got it from me, but now the credit unions tried to get it back from them because they went ahead and did it for them.
So they already made these charges against your credit account, and you're working with your bank to get those so you don't have to pay them. But, I mean, it sounds like your computer's in a non-functional point and that you were working with basically someone remotely, and then they pretty much wanted to, they called you again, unsolicited, and called you again, and then wanted to do some additional work for you and demand more money. Yeah, and I think it's to the point, if your computer's not working at all right now, how old is your computer? How many years
old? Well, it's old, so as I was telling my husband, it's like 15 years old, and it's a dinosaur, and it needs to be replaced.
Oh, if it's that old, I mean, yes.
Replace it.
Think about this for a second, ma'am. For $600, you can buy a brand new computer, so it would be just a waste to put it into something like that. The other thing that I'm going to suggest you do is that if you bought the service on your credit card, correct?
Yeah, but that was a year and a half ago.
Doesn't matter.
Because they stored my information, they tried to do it again when I refused to pay for this new service to get rid of the malware bites. And I'm not a wizard on the computer or anything, so I was just trying to fix it.
So she's already working with her bank on trying to get it done.
So here's what I think you need to do, if we can help you. I think you need to put this computer in the trash.
Well, she still has data on there, even though she doesn't have access to it, and she may want access to that. But stop using this computer and look at alternatives.
Yeah. Right. So buy another computer for half what they're asking from you.
Oh, I know. So I kept trying to sell them.
And second of all, when you have a situation like this, you don't want to give out your credit card number.
Oh no, I'll never do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're saying this most
from a year and a half ago.
Yeah, see, we know that you never do it again. We're saying this so that other people, because this gives us an opportunity to warn some other people.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the people that they do, and they called me and called me and called me, and still, even after all that was said and done, and I told them never to call me again.
Well, they're not allowed to do that, but this is obviously someone that's out of country, and then we can't touch them.
Yeah.
There are rules against businesses storing your cards and automatically doing charges like that without your authentication. Right. Other countries, they could do whatever they want. Yeah. Cal, you had something to say?
What town do you live in?
We live in Sunfield, which is Eaton County.
Okay. If you have a local computer store in that town that you feel comfortable going to?
Yeah, through the phone company, yeah.
What about a store where you can go and buy a computer at? Do you have any local stores like that in town?
Well, Best Buy, ABC, you know, Staples.
If you
not right here in town, but 15 minutes away, yeah.
If you want to look in your Yellow Pages or on the internet and see whether or not you can find a local independent computer store,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times they can be extremely helpful with you in recovering your data from that particular computer, and
mm-hmm.
also they can probably help you with maybe even buying a new computer in that particular case, just as well as the big box stores can. But the smaller independents can generally give you more customized service.
And they can get your data off and put it on your new computer.
Yeah, and they won't charge you. Hopefully they won't charge you an arm and a leg because they want your business.
Right.
You know, they want you to purchase a computer through them, and they'll work at recovering your data. I mean, I know places to remove viruses, they'll charge you $56. I mean, I drive by it every day on the way home. Little guy has a little, you know, about the size of a shed next to another building, and
right.
he has his own little computer company, and he says, I'll save your data, and I'll remove the viruses off your computers for $56.
Well, as I was telling my husband, I could buy a laptop, which he would have to learn how to do it, because he's not very good at all on the computer. But I would rather have a laptop because I also have Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
and I can then use it anywhere in the house.
That's right.
And he wants to keep replacing pieces, parts on that computer, and I think it's not worth it.
It's not. Because you can't, you know, you'd have to replace the bus. It would cost you too much.
I'd have to pay $100 now to get new security on it.
No,
you don't. There's free antivirus software out there.
Yeah.
Oh. I have that.
It'll come on your computer.
Avira,
yep, that's one of them.
Okay, and then I have...
So you're going to when you get a new computer, a new laptop, and we agree with you, that's what you should get,
uh-huh.
You'll be able to, it'll come with Microsoft's either 7.8.1, or if you wait a couple months, it'll come
with 10. What I was looking at, I believe, I could be wrong, 8.1.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you and want
it's going to be a
touchscreen.
Yeah.
You want a touchscreen with that.
Which was $200. Well, yeah. In order to fix the old computer, I need a new modem then.
Yeah. Well,
and that's $300.
Well, I'll tell you what. Go out and buy that new computer. Give us a call back when you get it, and we can help you out with some of the other things.
Yeah, and hang on. We'll talk to you offline.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. We're going to have to take and go for tonight. We're going to be back next week on your local stations. And this is the Internet Advisor Show. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Foster Brown will be back next week. So we're here any weekend that you care to call us. If you're calling in on WJR, it's
1-800-859-0957 or 1-800-WJR. So we're looking forward to seeing you next week. Tune us in at the same time. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find show notes for this podcast or others, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.